That's right. Okay. That's all right. Stand by.
Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 48. And as P.D. Pablo once said in his hit song, Raise Up, this one's for who? Us. That's right. This one goes out to myself, Bruce, World B, and of course, all our loyal listeners, as there's only been one NBA player in history to wear number 48, and that was Walt Gilmore for the Portland Trailblazers all the way back in 1970. So take a bow, everyone. This one is for us here tonight, and I'm going to bet against the both of you having any comments on Walt Gilmore. Am I right?
I don't have anything on Walt Gilmore, but I thought the 48 was in honor of the number of consecutive missed threes by the Celtics on Monday night, but
ooh, yeah. Well, I guess my bet was correct. You guys have no idea who Walt Gilmore is. So, Speaking of bets, Bet Online is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and the latest matchup reports for this year's NBA playoffs. Bet Online is your sports intel headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your insider sports wagering needs, from basketball, MLB, NHL hockey, golf, to UFC, and boxing. The fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your own home. Get in on the action today. So head to the website or use your mobile device to join, and be sure to use our promo code BELIEV, that is BLEAV, to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. And Bruce, welcome back to the show. You've been in our thoughts here at the 48 Minutes Podcast. Hope you're doing well. And tonight, I'll let you start us off with the opening tip.
Well, thank you, Ross. Some of you know that I missed last week's shows due to the death of my mom, Teddy, on Monday, May 22nd. Her funeral was on Thursday, the 25th. My mom was a huge sports fan, and she absolutely loved the Celtics. Normally, the kid picks up the love of a team from the parent, but in our case, the opposite was true. I loved the Celtics from the age of 9 when I went to my first game more than 50 years ago, and soon after, my mom became a big Celtics fan too. It was a great way for a single mom to bond with a young son, and we kept that bond going until mom could no longer watch games, you know, well into her 90s. But when the Celtics lost Game 3 to Miami the day before mom died, they were all but dead and buried themselves, trailing 3-0. But then the day after mom's death, they clung to life, winning game 4 to stay alive. And on the day of her funeral last Thursday, they won again, making the impossible seem possible. Then on Saturday night, they won their 3rd game in a row on a miracle play, and I started thinking that maybe mom was looking over them. And then on Monday night, their luck did run out, and their season ended in disappointment. But even though that happened, I think mom did all she could to try to help the Seas in the series.
Absolutely. I think they definitely had an angel on their side there, as that game 6 was quite the miracle. And we will be discussing that here soon. But before we get to that, World B, what do you have for an opening tip?
Well, Ross, the 76ers have reportedly settled on Nick Nurse to be their new next head coach, replacing Doc Rivers. And we will dispense with the obvious jokes connected with the two names and focus on the hire itself. Replacing a successful coach is not uncommon territory for Nurse, who took over for Dwayne Casey after he won 59 games in the 2017-2018 season. And needing the first big season to justify that controversial hire, all the Raptors and Nurse did, with the help of a one-year rental in Kawhi Leonard, was win an NBA title in his first season. And with this hire, the 76ers, who had championship aspirations coming into this season, are allowed to maintain those expectations going forward, no matter what the roster looks like after the summer. Although he never took the Raptors even close to the NBA Finals after that 2019 title, Nurse was able to show the NBA world what to expect from him as a coach, and that is an aggressive defense. In each of his last 3 seasons with the Raptors, they were number 1 in opponent turnover percentage. And then there's a connection with Nurse and 76ers executive Daryl Morey. Back when Morey was the Rockets GM, Nurse was the head coach of their G League team, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. The 76ers are hoping Nurk can provide the same quick championship results that he had with the Raptors.
Yeah, and that was quite a Viper team back then. They were experimenting with a lot of analytical things, shooting a ton of threes and playing a very funky system for the time. So should be interesting to see what Nick Nurse can do with this very talented Philadelphia 76er team. Of course, he's got the MVP on his side, so that's a good start for things. But certainly going to be interesting to see what happens with Harden. I mean, does he want to play for Nick Nurse? Does he want to go to Houston? We'll have to wait and see. But at least the Sixers have their coach, and I might be talking about another team that hired a coach later on in the show. But as for my opening tip, I'd like to use my time to discuss some offseason news on the horizon, as it's growing more apparent that the Warriors general manager is likely going to walk away from his role as GM, and that is Bob Myers. Despite the team's effort to retain him, you know, he just doesn't seem interested in taking this job further. So a lot of people are questioning, why might that be? I think the answer is actually pretty simple here. This is a tremendously successful core in which he helped construct, and it's at its very end. These are some very tough decisions to be made this offseason, and it's very likely the Warriors will break up their legendary core three in Curry, Thompson, and Draymond. Now, as I predicted a few months ago, I think Draymond Green is somehow headed to the Phoenix Suns. But if not, I think there's a different uniform in store for Draymond Green next season. I've actually got a ton of respect for Myers deciding to move on with these tough decisions likely looming. It's clear and natural for him to have close ties and relationships to the Warriors legends and their families. And for him to step down and do what's best for both himself, his relationships, and the team should be commended, as disappointing and strange as the news might be to most Warriors fans. So have to keep an eye out in the Bay Area for what looms out there here shortly. But let's get right to our first half. We're going to divide this up into halves here tonight. There's a lot to digest after just watching Game 7. But before we get there, as much as I'd like to start out by discussing tonight's big Game 7 win by the Miami Heat on the road, and Celtics falling short of that history, I think it's absolutely warranted to go ahead and break down the end of that crazy Game 6. And I'm going to just start out by saying just how wild that sequence of events was, from Mazzulla's challenge to, you know, the refs putting more time on the clock that seemed to be a little bit more time than what was warranted back then. And then, of course, Marcus Smart just perfectly missing that three. I mean, if that ball pops up 1 to 2 inches higher off that rim, I don't know if Derek White goes ahead and tips that in time. Just the precise timing of all that occurring. I mean, Bruce, as the Celtics fan here, what was that like watching that live? And did you believe that it went in as soon as you saw it? Did you think that he got it off in time, the tip?
I wasn't sure, because there was so much traffic around him and it was such a bang, bang thing. I mean, you know, that, once you saw a replay, it was pretty clear that it did go in. But yeah, I mean, to me at the time, I love, you know, Celtics history and, you know, going back, you know, decades. And to me, there are four kind of signature miracle plays in Celtics history. Havlicek stole the ball back in 65. Bird with the steal to DJ in 87. A lesser known play, Gerald Henderson's steal against the Lakers in the 84 finals, which was an unbelievable clutch play. And then the one by Derek White. And given the magnitude and the, you know, moment in time as it was happening, I had felt that was the most clutch play in Celtics history, thinking, all right, this could propel them to something that has never been done, you know, the four-game comeback. Turns out that it didn't, so it won't be remembered that way. But in real time, that's how it felt to me. It was amazing. And Derek White is a kind of guy, you know, I mean, is it any surprise that he came up through the Spurs system? The dude's hoop IQ is just way off the charts.
Yeah, definitely a great get there by the Boston Celtics. Now, World B, you had told me something very interesting off air. Kind of walk me through your reaction to just all that occurred there with the Jimmy Butler foul and the credit that you would like to give to Coach Mazzulla.
Well, first things first, I'll go one better with Bruce. I'll say, given everything that was at stake on that play, a trip to the NBA Finals for Miami and the Celtics, or the Celtics coming back and evening a series that they were down 3-0, I said that was the most amazing finish I'd ever seen in a playoff game. Never mind just the Celtics. Given everything that was on the line on that play, it was an incredible finish. Now, the play that preceded that was Jimmy Butler getting 3 free throws off of being fouled while attempting a 3. As you know, originally the clock said 2.1, I believe. I'm almost sure that's what it was. And yeah. Joe Mazzulla challenged that play, which enabled the refs not just to look. If the refs are going to review that play anyway, but if it's not a challenge, all they review is whether it was a 3-pointer or not, where his feet were. They weren't going to be able to challenge where the foul was, how much time was left on the clock. By Mazzulla challenging the play, they were allowed by rule to go and check everything associated with the play, which allowed them to see a foul that occurred in their eyes at the 3-second mark, which is, you know, great awareness by Joe Mazzulla to do that. On the other hand, as we talked about, if it did go up to 3 seconds, which they added time on it because they saw a foul, my personal opinion was I don't see how Jimmy Butler should have gotten 3 free throws because I don't think he was in the act of shooting at that point. It should have been 2 free throws for Butler, 3 seconds to go, tie game. By the way, unbelievable clutch performance by Jimmy Butler down the stretch of that game and hitting 3 free throws with a chance to go to the NBA Finals on the line after the game he had had for 3.5 quarters where he was just flat out terrible. And he came back and brought them back all the way and had what we thought was 3 free throws to give them an Eastern Conference title.
You know what's funny? A lot of people say, oh, you know, after that Boston, you know, win, they've got all the momentum going into Game 7. But here's the thing. They almost spit the bit in the final few minutes of that game. So you could almost see Miami, you know, if that game had gone 50 minutes instead of 48 minutes, Boston probably would have lost. I mean, it took a miracle play to stop the bleeding and get them, you know, that's why it was so miraculous and so unbelievable, because really Miami controlled that game down the stretch and Boston tried their best to give it to them. And, you know, Derek White clawed it back with that play.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't remember a time where I've seen a team get behind the way Miami does and just as an outside observer, not feel like they're in trouble. I mean, I'm not saying they live for these moments or they thrive on being down because nobody wants to get continually down 10. Eventually it catches you in the butt. But they're the team that gets down by double digits. And as a fan, you watch it. All right, well, when are they going to make that run? Because you know it's coming. Other teams, everybody else, after a while, it's like, geez, can they stop getting behind by 10? I've never seen a team that has such mental resolve to stay with it and not just blow up at the end when they get behind.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I thought Miami took their best punch in that game 6. I thought it was a very deflating feeling, having thought they had this one in the bag after Jimmy's 3 made free throws in a row, obviously getting the miss and then just not being able to come down with that rebound or at least, you know, keep Derek White off the glass there. I thought momentum actually did shift to Boston. I mean, coming back, winning 3 in a row, you know, all right, Miami took the first 3. Boston took the last 3. Boston's got the home court advantage for 7. I was predicting a much different result than what we saw here tonight. But, you know, once again, credit to this Miami Heat team continuing to battle. They could have had the life sucked out of them with just that heartbreaker of a loss in game 6. And certainly, Bruce, that's not what we saw tonight.
No, and one last thing about game 6. You know, in the post-game, you know, interviews, Eric Spoelstra basically said, we got 48 hours. I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to win that game on Monday night. And Jimmy Butler pretty much said the same thing. Now, it could have just been, you know, a little bit of, you know, false bravado, but it really turned out that it wasn't. It turned out that, and we know that Miami is a mentally tough team. We've been saying it since the very first game of the playoffs. And I think that was a great example of it. I'm sure Pat Riley loved that he did that because that's the kind of thing that Riles would have done back when he was coaching too. It's like, Coaching is more than X's and O's. Steve Kerr is the greatest example of this. Coaching is leading men successfully, making them believe, sometimes believe even when maybe they're not so sure themselves. But having had him say that, you just got to tip your hat to them. They did it right. They earned it. And Monday night, they really put the screws to Boston.
Yeah. I mean, Miami, I think the perfect way to sum them up is that they have not just next man up mentality, they have next game up mentality. We've saw that all series long, whether it be the next man up, having big games when it's needed, and guys like Cody Martin having a great night, Caleb Martin, I'm sorry, having a big night here tonight and game 7 on Monday. And then, of course, just next game up. You know, they lost a tough one game 6 and came back swinging game 7 and showed more fight than Boston did tonight. And kind of going back to that next man up mentality of, you know, how the Heat pick each other up here. On Boston's side tonight, Bruce, what did you notice about when Tatum didn't have it going tonight? I mean, what really irked you in this one?
Well, I hate to jump on guys when they're down, but really Jaylen Brown had a really bad game in this game. I mean, in addition to 8 turnovers, which was, more than half of the team's total, I think they had 15, he had 8 of them. He shot awful. He kept taking bad shots from outside early in the shot clock. They just, for a while, early in the third quarter, they really were putting the hammer to Miami with their defense. They played really well defensively and got themselves back in the game. But they never really were in sync offensively. The only guy who really had a good game offensively, I thought, for Boston was Derek White. And even Derek White shot probably 5 out of 12 from the floor, but he was at least trying to do the right thing. When Tatum, hurt himself early on and wasn't really able to play his normal game, that's when Jaylen Brown really needed to be the guy to get you 35 on some pretty good shots, and he didn't. Okay. And it's not all on him, but look, you're second team all NBA. You want the $300 million contract. Yeah. This would have been a really nice time to show everybody, give him the money. Cause I'm sure a lot of Boston fans at this point are probably saying, I don't know if Jaylen Brown's worth that. Maybe we should try and, trade him and get something that maybe complements, whatever. Although I love Jaylen Brown as a player, I really do. But this is a business. It's not, you can't make these decisions with your heart. You have to go with your head. And as far as him coming up small tonight, he wasn't the only one, but he was the one that the most pressure would have been on, and it didn't work out for him.
Will be anything to add here on Boston? Obviously, I think it was a surprise to all of us just how non-competitive this one was in the second half. The Heat pretty much opened up the door and demonstrated excellent time management skill and execution there, and Boston just didn't really have many answers.
Well, from Boston's standpoint, first of all, 15 points in the first quarter, you go 0 for 10. You put yourself in a hole, 0 for 10 from 3. You put yourself in a hole. That's tough to get out of. You're not going to win big games, I don't care if you're playing at home or not, when your three best players go 3 for 19 from 3. It's just not going to happen. Jaylen Brown gets as many turnovers as field goals. That's just not winning formula right there. I thought a huge thing, and I texted you guys, I thought a huge part to this game was you could see it watching. Miami's decision not to go crash in the glass will send maybe one person if he's around, but everybody get back on D and avoid giving up easy fast break points to the Celtics, who only had 2 fast break points through 3 quarters. They ended up with 8 for the game. But they decided we're going to – lost in that whole game 6 for Boston was the fact they were 7-35 from three-point range. I mean, they shot just 20%. And tonight, or Monday, in game 7, 9-42. That's 21% on threes in 2 games. 16-77 on threes over 2 games. Eric Spoelstra saw that from game 6. I'm sure he looked at it. He goes, you know what? We lost on a fluke play at the end. But look at what the Celtics did for the long haul. They were 7-35 from three. Let's make them shoot it again. And four times out of the seven games, Boston shot under 30% from 3-point range. We said it before. That's their bread and butter. They take a lot of threes, and during the season, they made a lot of threes. And this series, they did not. And then Miami has done an excellent job in the last two series, at least. They weren't so great in against Milwaukee. Not that mattered, obviously, five games. But they held the Knicks under 30% from three, and they held the Celtics to 30% from three-point range in this series. So they knew what the game plan was. Make them shoot it and see if they can beat us. Didn't come close to it tonight.
Yeah, only 84 points for Boston here tonight. Another thing, of course, that Celtics fans were optimistic about going into Game 7, Malcolm Brogdon back in the rotation. Unfortunately, only played 7 minutes, 0 points, 0 boards, 0 assists. Somehow he got a block. But, Bruce, were you a little shocked that Brogdon didn't have much else to give the C's tonight, or were you not expecting much just given his history with injuries and just kind of knowing he was kind of trying to rush back a bit?
I think he was trying to come back because he thought he could help the team. And I certainly applaud somebody who's willing to play hurt, you know, when it's all on the line. But you could see he was tentative with the ball when he was handling it. He didn't have the kind of force that he usually has going to the hoop. On the couple of times that he shot the ball, it wasn't even close to going in. I think one of them might have been an air ball, and one of them just had no chance of going in. So, yes, you know, I respect the fact that he did it. And Malcolm Brogdon has been a huge guy for their team this year. But he just, you know, he just didn't he didn't have much to give him, I guess. And but I appreciate the fact that he tried.
Yeah, and another tidbit I thought definitely should be mentioned on this show, Bruce, because it was a great point raised by you, is, you know, as much as we applaud Caleb Martin, how about you tell the folks and give us a little bit of a rant on what you had to say about tonight's broadcasters and some of the comments that were made?
Okay, well, there's really two that kind of stick out to me. As I was watching the game, and again, if you all want to go back and look at the tape on League Pass or on NBA TV tomorrow, in the first quarter, when Boston had 15 points, Ben Adebayo was absolutely a maniac on defense. He was guarding. He was closing out on every guy who had the ball. He was covering ground in the paint. He was moving around. He was making his presence known. And I thought that it was a huge key to Miami coming out of that first quarter, only allowing 15 points. Those guys on TNT said not one word about Bam Adebayo's defense. And it's like, to me, that's where you can, like, you know, help make the fans a little bit smarter if you point stuff like that out. So that was number one. Number two is towards the end of the game when you know, Stan Van Gundy, who, you know, I like him better in a three-man booth than a two-man booth because he has to shut up once in a while. In a two-man booth, he talks nonstop, and it's annoying. He says some stupid things. And one of the stupid things that he managed to get in late in the game was the following. You know, for the Boston fans that are going to say, oh, you know, Jason Tatum hurt himself in the game and they were compromised and blah, blah, blah. You know, Tyler Hero didn't play a single minute in this series. And how about that? And I'm thinking to myself, gee, who got all of Tyler Hero's minutes? Caleb Martin, who was only like the difference maker in this whole series. So if you want to tell me about, you know, Tyler Hero not playing, at least have enough, you know, whatever credibility to say, but, you know, Caleb Martin probably played better than Tyler Hero would have played at his peak in the NBA. So those were a couple of things that I just found to be like really, you know, A, do a better job on your analysis, and B, put a little context into it or a little self-awareness when you're saying this guy didn't play. Gee, so Caleb Martin would have gotten all those minutes if Tyler Hero played? I don't think so.
Yeah, by the way, go ahead. Sorry, Ross.
I was just going to say, you're our Charlotte Hornet extraordinaire here. I mean, you have anything to say about this performance from Caleb Martin? I mean, we sure couldn't have seen this coming from his days as a Hornet, could we?
You know, he was progressing. I remember watching him and his brother. He was progressing as a player. I was actually a little surprised that he ended up, or maybe not surprised, but disappointed as a Hornets fan that he left. Nobody saw this coming. I mean, during the regular season, He had four 20-point games in the regular season. In this series, he did that three times. I mean, he was just really, really an impressive performance by him, who was supposed to be there for defense. And here's a real example of why Miami is moving on and Boston is not. One of their best players, Bam Adebayo, did not have a good offensive game. 12 points. Wasn't, you know, missed, you know, close ones. Just did not have it tonight offensively. Bruce's point about defense was something different. But they didn't get a good performance at one of their top two guys. And somebody else steps up, like Caleb Martin. Jason Tatum hurts his ankle, doesn't have a great game, struggles with that. You need your other guy to step up. And nobody, Jaylen Brown, that Marcus Smart, nobody stepped up to have a kind of performance they needed to make up for Jason Tatum struggling. So, yeah, Caleb Martin was probably, in this series, the most valuable player on that series. I mean, with all due respect to Jimmy Butler, who was amazing and had another solid game, who, by the way, is also, I'm sure that ankle that he hurt in the New York series is not exactly 100% either. Although, after a few weeks, keeping the play on it. But, you know, he had a great, you know, had a solid game tonight, 28 points. And it was really you find it hard to believe that a 2 seed against an 18, you could say the better team won this series. But that's true. The better team won this series.
The better team, the more connected team, the mentally tougher team, the team that, you know, believed in themselves. One more thing I wanted to mention about Caleb Martin from the stupid commentary on TNT department tonight. At one point, Reggie Miller said, you know, Caleb Martin's making a lot of money with this performance in this series. And it's like, so that would make you think, gee, he must be a free agent, right? He's going to sign with somebody after this season. He's under contract for 2 more years at around $7 million a year for 2 more years. So, yeah, maybe he'll be great in the next 2 playoffs as he was in this one and make a lot of money off of it. But, you know, you're making people think, gee, he must be a free agent. He's going to make a lot of money off this series. He's under contract for 2 more years. It's like, do some homework, you know, or don't make stupid comments when you don't really have your facts straight. It's TNT. Yeah, it's not local cable.
For sure. That was definitely a misleading statement there by Reggie in that one. And one fun fact I got to throw in here for all our listeners, and especially for World B, in 2011, Jimmy Butler, as a senior at Marquette, knocked off senior Joe Mazzulla in West Virginia in the second round of the Big East tournament. So once again, here we are in 2023, and Jimmy Butler's knocking off Mazzulla yet again in a different fashion.
Now, do you know what happened in the year before?
No, I don't. Refresh my memory.
Joe Mazzulla came off the bench and led West Virginia to win over Kentucky with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins to get to the Final Four.
There we go. That was a nice counter.
I choose to remember that, Joe Mazzulla, as opposed to the following season.
They say in the coaches' pickup games, he kicks butt in those coaches' pickup games. So I guess he's still got it when it comes to, you know, his previous vocation. Hopefully, you know, he'll continue to grow in his current vocation.
Yep. Well, do we have anything else here?
Sorry, world.
Do we have anything?
I think he came out of this series fine, considering he was pretty much fired after Game 3. I think he will be back in following season.
Yeah, he definitely was making better decisions as the series went on. I agree, particularly in his managing of timeouts. I thought he did do a much better job as the series went on. Winning kind of makes you look good when you're a coach, right?
Always does.
So you guys are both in agreement he's back next year.
Oh yeah.
I agree. I thought he was going to be back no matter what to begin with. We talked about this. I don't think Brad Stevens, that's Brad Stevens' pick. That's a guy. What they should do, and what I think they will do, is they will put a probably a more experienced staff with him. You know, when he got hired, that was right before the season when that whole mess started, and he got, you know, chosen to be the interim coach and later given the head coaching reins. But, you know, they didn't have a whole lot of staff. They didn't have a whole lot of, I don't want to say experience, but they didn't have a full set of, you know, staff. Stoudemire left for Georgia Tech. And so he was, you know, you got one assistant who left, you got another who got elevated. So it was a little bit of disarray. And for the way that season began, before it began for the Celtics, to end up at Game 7, the Eastern Conference Finals, I think they would take that any day of the week.
I would love to see them bring in somebody like Nate McMillan and say, Nate, you know, you want to be the number one assistant, or even an old timer like a Terry Stotts, somebody who's experienced, who doesn't necessarily feel like, you know, they're gunning for that next big payday job, but somebody who maybe wants to work, you know, with some younger players or some good players, or just help develop a coach like Joe Mazzulla. I mean, yeah, he'll definitely be back. I mean, that's not even a question. He's coming back, okay? But I think it is up to Brad Stevens to give him a little bit of help. You know, he had Damon Stoudemire, who was helping him in that way. So now just bring in another guy that can fill that role, and I think, and give Mazzulla a chance to grow. And, you know, I think he's earned that much. He has.
Yeah. And last thing here before we go ahead and wrap up our first half here is, Bruce, you kind of look at this bench for the Boston Celtics. Are you expecting some major changes? I mean, of course, I think Grant Williams is going to be a free agent. Peyton Pritchard, free agent. Blake Griffin, I believe, is a free agent. So a lot of changing of reserves. Are you expecting just a new bench reserve team next year?
I mean, look, Blake Griffin barely took his warmups off in the postseason. In fact, most of the season, he barely took his warmups off. He would get some spot starts when Horford would sit out the second night of a back-to-back, but he was mostly there to be kind of a locker room kind of Sherpa, you know, like a professional that would hopefully be good in practice and stuff like that, showing some of these young guys the way. Pritchard's going to be gone. I would expect him to end up in a place like Portland since he went to Oregon. Maybe he would want to sign as a free agent there. He'd be a good guy to have behind Dame, you know, on their bench. Because Peyton Pritchard's a good player. I mean, he's scrappy. I mean, he's not super talented, but he's scrappy and he's courageous. I mean, he'll stick his nose into the action. He's not afraid. As far as the other, I mean, look, the big question really is not so much the bench guys. The big question is, with Jaylen Brown now up for this $300 million contract on the heels of how things went in this postseason, I think that could be, I mean, look, a lot of teams would want him. And I'm not even sure what the right trade for him would be. I don't want draft picks for Jaylen Brown, okay? Damian I want Lillard. Somebody... Maybe Damian Lillard, yeah. Maybe somebody that could come in and make an immediate impact. And really, a classic point guard would be nice on that team. Marcus Smart is pretty good at that. But really, you know, Marcus Smart is such a streaky shooter that he's not, you know, I mean, he has his moments. But, I mean, he's out there for other reasons. So I would say that there's probably a 50% chance that Jaylen Brown will be moved during this offseason, and it'll be really interesting to see where he goes and what they're able to get for him.
Yeah, wow, you're putting it at 50%. That's quite high. I mean, this is a fairly young
this is a fairly young roster too. This is not a, you know, we mentioned before, Tatum's only 25. Jaylen Brown's, I don't know, he's even 30. I don't think Marcus Smart's not even 30.
Jaylen Brown's not 30. No.
So, yeah. So, I mean, this is a young roster, and you, whatever moves you make, it's a unique situation that you have a good future with the Celtics, sustainable future with their players, but you're also in a win now mode because you've been to the finals, you've been to the Eastern Conference Finals multiple times. You don't want to rebuild even though you're young. So they're in an interesting position right now. I agree with Bruce. Based off of – it's going to be really interesting because you don't want to go off your last moment seeing Jaylen Brown with 8 turnovers in the biggest game of the season and give a guy $300 million. But you take everything as a whole, he's one of the top 15 players in the league, clearly. So, you know, you have to balance what, you know, where you go. But you also have to think, like you said, about the future of this franchise. You put Tatum, you give Brown all this money, where are you going to be, you know, settle with for everybody else?
And look, if he weren't up for a contract that is going to be paying him $60 million a year for 5 years, I wouldn't feel this way. Okay. I really wouldn't. If he was looking at a more manageable contract, I'd say run it back with him and play him into the future. But look, Al Horford is 36 years old. Robert Williams III, as talented as he is somebody that you always, if you're a Celtics fan, it's like he's skating on thin ice a lot of times out there. You're wondering when he goes down, is he going to get up? The guy gets hurt a lot. So if you're looking at a team like Portland, let's say, and again, I'm kind of talking a little bit off the top of my head here, but if you're talking about Portland, something like Lillard and maybe like a Yusuf Nurkic, he'd be a valuable guy on Boston. You know, he'd be the kind of guy that could possibly be valuable. And again, he's not the greatest. He's not the greatest big, but he's pretty serviceable. I mean, I'd say he's in the Jakob Poeltl kind of category.
Oh, I like him. I think he's a solid player. I agree with you. But you're going to get rid of somebody or potentially get rid of somebody because of his health for another guy who's got health issues. Yeah. In the past. So now when they're on the court, I think he's a better center than Williams. I think his offense is better, certainly better. I wouldn't necessarily go as far with defense. No, I like him as a player. I think he's a solid player, but staying on the court has been his issue too.
Sure. I know that's true. Everyone's got
problems. I don't know if you guys can afford him, but I think the perfect Celtic with how you guys play right now would be Vucevic, who's coming up for under contract. I think he'd be great with the Boston Celtics. The way he can shoot the ball, pass the ball. I don't know. I think he'd fit your system, but it sounds like you're not on board, Bruce.
He's a slightly better defender than Enes Kanter was. Let's put it that way. You need somebody who could play some defense in that role if you're Boston. You know, you don't necessarily need another shooter there. You need somebody that's, you know, a poor man's, you know, a big. You need a big that's a defensive big and a rebounder. And
gets well, I'll stop talking now with my bad ideas. So we've gone ahead and reached our halftime buzzer, and we'll go ahead and take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back with the start of our second half, and let's go ahead and discuss the 2023 NBA Finals and give our listeners here a preview as the fresh-legged and well-rested Denver Nuggets look forward to hosting the battle-tested Miami Heat. And World B, I'll start with you. What are your initial thoughts thinking about that matchup?
I think it's going to be a tremendous matchup when you look at the matchups. Joker against Bam. I mean, how does Bam contain it? That might be the best test that Joker has in this postseason, going up against a great center, great defensive center like Bam. He's going to bring him out. He's going to stretch him beyond the three-point line a little bit, or at least, you know, beyond the paint. And then it's Jamal Murray, who, you know, Butler, I assume, will be guarding Jamal Murray. And if it's not him, it'll be Caleb Martin. And so there's some really good matchups here for this series. And it's going to be, for me, it's like Miami did against the Knicks, like Miami did against the Celtics. The number one three-point shooting team in this postseason has been Denver. So they got four of their five starters are shooting 40% from three-point range. So how does Miami battle with that? How do they decide? You know, it's not going to be like it was with the Celtics here, where they say, shoot it and see if you can beat us. I think they know Denver can do it.
Bruce?
Well, you know, the way that Joker dominated, like, the giant bigs so far in the playoffs. Now, again, Anthony Davis is only 6'10", so he's not a seven-footer. But DeAndre Ayton's a seven-footer, and Rudy Gobert was a seven-footer. And Joker had his way with those guys, all of them, really. So it'll be interesting because Bam is able to, you know, they run the offense through Bam a lot of times, and he's really good at it. So that's going to mean that Joker has to play defense a little bit differently than he did against these, you know, low-post, you know, pivot guys, you know. Or Ayton, who's really kind of a non-offensive threat, unless it's an alley-oop or an offensive rebound. So Adebayo's got a really nice offensive game, and I think it'll be a challenge for Joker, but it's also going to be a challenge for Bam, too, because Yeah. I still haven't seen a one-on-one person guarding Joker that could speed him up or take him out of his rhythm. Now, maybe a 6'9 guy who can move like Bam might be the guy to do it. We haven't really seen Joker contend with that so far. But, you know, I mean, Joker's been around for a while, and you really haven't seen anybody force him out of his game.
Yeah, the Joker's definitely gone ahead and passed every test thus far as matchups are concerned. I'm really looking forward to seeing if he can continue to kind of pick apart a defense like the Miami Heat, who force a lot of turnovers and bait you into bad shots or want you to take low percentage shots. Like, how is Denver going to be able to counteract that? I mean, I'm looking mostly at Jamal Murray. As you guys mentioned, Jimmy Butler is probably going to get that assignment. That's going to be a tough task for Jamal. And then the other guy who's been playing extremely well here as of recently, Michael Porter Jr., he's going to have a big series for this team on the offensive end. He's going to have to pick up his scoring load because I think they're really going to put a focus on of course, the two-man game of Murray and Joker defensively on Miami's side. And then, of course, for that Heat offense, I mean, Jimmy Butler is going to have to, of course, continue to play at a high level. I mean, I'm not one to really question Jimmy Butler after everything we've seen, but, you know, they have had certainly some tough battles here throughout the course of the playoffs. Denver's been off. How much that plays a factor, you know, is something that concerns me. And Bruce, I asked World this last episode. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this. If you were a Nuggets fan, would you be concerned at all about how much time you've had off as far as just like having lost some of that momentum after playing four competitive games against the Lakers and executing and winning all those and having just all that rolling? And then it's like, let's pause for a week and now pick it back up to high intensity.
Totally. I mean, Denver's going to have 9 days off between their final game against LA and game one of the finals. And, you know, they seemed pretty healthy in the conference finals. They had nobody on the injury report for game four. Okay. So they were a totally healthy team. So it's not like they've got a bunch of guys that kind of were running on fumes in that series and they needed time to recharge. They didn't, you know, they were playing their best ball at just the right time. So I think there is such a thing as too much rest when a team is healthy. And I think it's going to really be on Coach Michael Malone to find a way to keep these guys sharp during such a lengthy layoff, because I think it's kind of almost assumed that in the first half of game one on Thursday night, it's going to take them a little bit of time to find their rhythm. And if Miami can kind of jump out on them quick and make a few shots early, they'll really, you know, make it difficult on Denver. Although I don't think a lot of people are picking Denver to win, but yeah, I think that's a real thing, Ross. Too much rest sometimes, again, when a team is already healthy, you know, it should be a concern.
And we'll be to you here. Of course, Miami has had their fair share of reserves kind of stepping up in big moments and having big games, just like Caleb Martin. Who do you think that guy is going to need to be this series for Miami in particular? Is it going to be a guy like Duncan Robinson coming off the bench or even starting, knocking down big threes and kind of helping spark some offense there? Or who do you have your eye on to be a difference maker against this talented Nuggets defense?
Well, it's going to be, I think their big question for them is, are there two starting guards? Can they do it one more time? Max Strus and Gabe Vincent. Can they, you know, this is now the big time for them. I mean, they, you know, we've marveled at how well they've played throughout this postseason, how they've, you know, been in the lineup and really haven't any bad moments. It's not been because they succumbed to any pressure of the moment. They just maybe had a bad game or here or there. But you're going to have to get production out of them, and you're going to have to get production out of Caleb Martin. These are now – Caleb Martin now is – they need those points. This is not a luxury anymore. They're going to need, like Bruce said, scoring from other than Bam and Jimmy Butler. They're going to need Caleb Martin's points. They're going to need Duncan Robinson to keep shooting the way he's capable of. The positive thing for Miami is they went through two of the top four defenses – in the Celtics and the Bucks, and they went up against the Knicks that Tom Thibodeau traditionally has a good defense, and they had an excellent series against the Cavaliers coming into that matchup with the Heat. So they've been really battle-tested, not just by the length of their series and the opponents they played, by tough defenses. And now you're going up against a Nuggets team with, you know, we love their offense. Their defense is definitely not up to the same part, not up to the same level as these other teams. And that's, you know, that'll be a test for Denver as well to match up with some of these guys. How do they stop Jimmy Butler? How are they going to stop Bam stretching him out and getting in the middle there? And can they stop those three-point shooters for Miami, who's had an excellent three-point shooting season in the postseason?
I believe that, Ross, I believe that Kyle Lowry is going to have a very important role in this series. Because here's the thing. Miami is not going to have home court. So they're going to have potentially four games in Denver at altitude against a team that's rested. And they had to go the distance against Boston. So they got some guys that are looking a little bit raggedy. At least they didn't play raggedy, but you could see they're probably like, you know, with oxygen in their, you know, on the team playing home. But here's the thing, and this is what Kyle Lowry did so well in Game 7 against Boston. He is a guy that knows how to control the tempo of a game. He did it against Boston. He was plus 26 in Game 7 in like 24 minutes, okay? And it's not because he was scoring points. It was because he was running the team. He was like the jockey riding the horse in the Kentucky Derby. He knew when to go to the whip hand, and he knew when to back off. And in that altitude, Miami's going to try and slow the pace as much as they possibly can because they can play that game. And Denver can play that game too, okay? Now it's just going to be, you know, who can make some shots and can anybody stop Joker? So, I think Kyle Lowry is going to be my under-the-radar guy for Miami in the finals.
And by the way, guys, you know, we talked about – I'm sorry, Ross, I apologize – we talked about how raggedy maybe Denver or Miami is because they went to this brutal series and they had to go through Milwaukee and everything while Denver is rested. Kevin Love didn't play the last two games. DMP, coach's decision, the last two games. So he was healthy and kept out of the lineup. Cody Zeller didn't play in this game. Spoelstra basically went with seven guys in the last two games of this series. So, I mean, you know, a couple guys got some minutes here and there, but it's basically a seven-man rotation. He'll have guys ready to go if he needs, especially bodies, if he needs. And he'll Kevin Love will get some run. Cody Zeller will get some run because if nothing else, you need six fouls from Cody to muscle up with the Joker and stuff like that. So, yeah, some guys are going to be tired. And not to mention Tyler Hero could be back by, I'm hearing, by game three perhaps. He's ready. He's cleared to participate in clear to practice and all that. And I thought I saw something that said maybe by game three or whatever, what a boost that could potentially be for Miami. So they've gone through the fire, the rigor of a seven game series, but they're not completely spent, I don't think, energy wise.
I would be shocked if Hero had significant minutes in this series. I mean, why would you introduce him into the mix at this point, the way they're playing and the way their chemistry has been? He's probably not going to be in game shape. He hasn't played in like 6 weeks. Okay. And look, maybe there's a certain role that he can fulfill, but I mean, if he's taking minutes from Caleb Martin, I would say put on your uniform and have a seat next to me.
Yeah. No, I think you guys both made fabulous picks there. As far as Bruce, you pointed out Kyle Lowry. I think the one instance where we could see Tyler Hero is if Lowry's just flat. You know, we get those games from him, especially as an aging star past his prime now. If he just looks terrible out there, come game three, they might not have another option but to unleash Hero, see what he can give them. Of course, his injury was to his shooting hand, so hopefully he's been at least on an elliptical or treadmill trying to keep his cardio up during this time. And then, you know, we'll be another fabulous take here as far as the big men off that Heat bench having not played the last couple of games. That could be big for Miami, having to face the Joker and having some extra bodies. And kind of going back to what you said about how good Boston's or Miami's defensive transition was against Boston. I mean, that's going to be key against Denver too, with, you know, Denver introducing a big that's going to grab the ball and either whip it ahead, you know, and they'll be going, or the Joker will push it himself. And that's going to be a new look as, the Celtics had Robert Williams or Jason Tatum typically grabbing a lot of those rebounds. So should be a lot of fun. I think the matchup that I want to see the most is two pit bulls going at it. It's going to be Bruce Brown and Jimmy Butler hustling and bustling for offensive boards. Those are two of the toughest guys in the NBA. Probably the two that I would love to see in a fight if you had to make me pick two. I know that's a weird thing to say, but if two guys were going to duke it out, those might be the two I'd like to see as far as just the kind of size and stature of the both of them. I think they're going to go toe-to-toe, and we might see them come head-to-head at some point during the series fighting for a loose ball. So it's going to be a big battle. I think both these teams obviously have a lot of fight in them. We just saw that tonight with the Miami Heat. But this Denver team, I think that, as Dave Wool said, you know, he thinks it's Denver's year. And I think he is correct. I think Denver's going to win the series. But if we think the Heat are going to lay down easily, I think this past series showed that, you know, it's not going to be easy. Denver better bring a lunch pail. And with no that, question. Let's go ahead and get – yeah. Should we do predictions? I'm sorry. I think we should do predictions because I had Celtics in five last series, so why not just keep the laughing stock going here? I'm going to take the Nuggets in six games. What about you guys?
I think the Nuggets are going to win. I'm not really sure of the number of games. I could see five. I could see seven. I don't think it'll be six. Okay. Because that would mean Denver wins it in Miami. I think Denver's going to win it at home, either in game five or game seven.
All right. Will be?
I think Miami's going to win this series. I believe in what they've been doing throughout. I think they've gone through a tougher competition. They've beaten two of the best teams in the league. And they, you know, the win over Milwaukee was, we forget about it because it was so long ago. That was a real stunner. Just how impressive. Not just that they won, but they really dominated that series. And then to beat the Knicks, who had momentum with a higher seed, who had beaten Miami three out of four in the regular season, and they took care of them with really relative ease. As a Knicks fan, I can say that, but it wasn't the most difficult of series. And then to go and the mental toughness to lose game six the way they did and come back and really blow out the Celtics in game seven, I believe in what they're doing. I believe in Spoelstra as a coach. I think they have the right chemistry right now and the right players. And I'll say they're going to win in six games. They're going to win in Denver.
All right. And with that, let's get to our final thoughts. And Bruce, why don't you lead us off?
All right. Thanks, Ross. Maybe it's just me, but I find Karl Malone's Dream Team memorabilia auction to be really tacky. It's not that he chose to sell off items from his Barcelona teammates that were autographed for him by these hoop legends. While I'd be curious to know what his teammates think of it, I think the items are his property and he can do with them what he chooses. That said, the collection netted $5 million, with the top item being a Michael Jordan jersey that went for just over $3 million. Considering that these precious items were given to him, presumably for his own enjoyment, I wouldn't blame fellow Dream Teamers if they felt a bit betrayed that the mailman profited big time off their generosity. If Malone had offered to donate a part of the proceeds to charity, I'd feel a whole lot better about this transaction. In the mailman's 19-year NBA career, he earned over $105 million. Was he so hard up for money that he needed another $5 million? I mean, there are many worthy charities that could benefit from this sale, and Malone could donate, let's say, $1 million and keep the other $4 million for himself, and he'd be a big hero. And I'd personally feel better about this whole smelly situation. Or maybe, God forbid, even ask the other Dream Teamers if they had any charities they'd like him to support through the sale with the proceeds. But I've seen no mention of any charities that are going to receive any money from the sale. And that's why I think this whole thing is really unsavory.
Yeah, great thought there, and pointing that out, as I did see that jersey went for over $3 million, which was pretty mind-blowing as far as an auction is concerned. World B, what do you have for us?
Well, thank you, Ross. The NBA is investigating veteran referee Eric Lewis in regards to his use of social media. Specifically, the league is looking into allegations. He had an anonymous Twitter account and was commenting on officiating, which is a violation of NBA rules. Some have found this news to be humorous since some of the tweets from his Twitter accounts were defending the officiating, including Lewis himself. But to the NBA, this is no laughing matter. In this age of social media, the microscope on officiating in this league has never been greater. And after the Tim Donaghy gambling mess from 15-plus years ago, The integrity of officials is constantly in question, a perception the league has tried very hard to change. Replay reviews, making mistakes at the end of games, more transparent to the public. These are steps the league is hoping will convince fans that the NBA is on the up and up. These allegations against Lewis do not seem like anything egregious on the surface, but for the league, anything connected to the officials is not a good look these days.
Not at all. And I did see that thread on Reddit as well, everyone investigating that, and should be interesting to see what the verdict is as far as whether or not it actually was the veteran official there. As for my final, after nearly a decade gaining experience interviewing for open head coaching jobs with various teams around the league, Adrian Griffin's persistence and hard work has finally paid off as he easily landed the biggest head coaching role he's ever interviewed for. On Saturday, the Bucks made their decision official as the now former Raptors lead assistant coach beat out both Kenny Atkinson and his former Toronto colleague Nick Nurse for the big opportunity. It was reported Giannis met with all three coaching candidates at his house prior to the Bucks decision, and Giannis endorsed Griffin afterwards. As previously mentioned on a prior show, Bucks GM John Horst has a previous relationship working with Griffin as an assistant coach on Scott Skiles' staff in Milwaukee. While I'm still a bit surprised the Bucks did not go with a coach with head coaching experience, I am confident that their level of communication and chemistry will be healthy and one that Griffin can certainly provide some relief to Bucks fans who are worried about that lack of head coaching experience with this hire. It's also worth pointing out that Griffin is not only a former player himself, but also a father to a young NBA player in AJ Griffin, which definitely should help him relate to the current day players he leads. Additionally, he's worked alongside some great basketball minds like Scott Skiles, Tom Thibodeau, Billy Donovan, and of course, most recently, Nick Nurse. By all accounts, Adrian Griffin is a tremendous person, and as surprising as the hire was, I can't help but root for someone who's paid their dues and finally has received the opportunity of a lifetime leading the Greek Freak and the Milwaukee Bucks. So good luck to Coach Griffin. And with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you on Friday to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.
So long, y'all.
All right.
Good. Thought we hit all the right notes there.
Yep. Yeah. No, that was great.
The one number I wanted to get in.